This is the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. It's Thursday, April 25th. I'm John Wanamaker. Fargo is downsizing its flood fight after the National Weather Service released a new lower flood forecast for the Red River. The change means fewer sandbags will be needed to prepare for a river crest expected late next week. Dan Gunderson reports.
Based on earlier projections of a potential record flood, Fargo officials plan to build their sandbag dikes to 43 feet. After the National Weather Service trimmed the river forecast, Fargo leaders decided to build the sandbag dikes to 40 feet. That means instead of placing nearly 1.5 million sandbags in backyards, volunteers will only need to move about 100,000 sandbags. Hundreds of high school students will build the sandbag dikes on Friday. Deputy Mayor Tim Mahoney says some residents who hope to avoid potential damage to their yards from crews moving those sandbags want to wait and see if the river forecast changes again.
And the issue you have is safety, is if we wait so long till we know exactly where the river is going to go, you do not want people down next to the water. The water is cold. If you slip and fall, it's a danger, it's a hazard. So it's, what we're going to try to do is button everything down this Friday, get ready for the water to come.
Across the Red River in Moorhead, the city plans to use only about 62,000 sandbags to protect a dozen homes from the anticipated river crest. The river forecast has changed from a range of 38 to 42 feet down to a range of 38 to 40 feet. The record flood level in Fargo is 40.8 feet. National Weather Service forecaster Greg Gust says the river forecast could still change again because forecast models are having a difficult time with the late spring thaw.
This year, because it's so late in the calendar year and there's no historical analog for this. So in all the years that we have a history of the river response in detail, and that goes back to the late 1800s, there's no year that is this late in the season.
Gust says a couple of key factors will influence how the Red River behaves over the next 2 weeks. How much water will soak into the soil as it thaws, and how much rain will fall next week.
Heavy rains are quite possible from Tuesday into Wednesday of next week. So we looked at what does it take to push the model to 40 feet. And if we get thunderstorms with an inch or more of rain in there, that 40-foot range pops back up.
Every foot of flood protection is important for city leaders planning to fight the flood, and each foot is costly. To raise several miles of temporary dike by 1 foot can require hundreds of thousands of additional sandbags. Fargo officials say at higher river levels, building dikes and levees 1 foot higher can cost as much as $1 million. Fargo Mayor Dennis Wallacher says some residents think the city should cut back even more on the flood fight. He says that would be a bad idea.
And I know there's some reluctance out there. I mean, one of the questions I've been getting from the media now is, are we spending too much money? We either rely on the National Weather Service or we don't. But who is going to be there if we fail?
Wallacher says the city needs to be over-prepared for the flood. He cautions residents should not be overconfident in light of the revised flood forecast. The Red River is likely to crest in Fargo and Moorhead on May 2nd or 3rd. That will be the latest spring flood crest on record. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
The Minnesota House has passed a tax bill that raises a number of taxes. It also gives subsidies to businesses and provides property tax relief to homeowners and renters. The House voted 69-64 in favor of the bill. 4 Democrats voted against it. The bill would raise income taxes on top earners and also hike the cigarette and alcohol taxes. Democrats say the bill is needed to balance the budget and spend more on schools and other state services. DFL Representative Tina Liebling of Rochester says the tobacco tax increase makes sense because it will make people quit smoking.
This is a provision that will literally save lives. There are very few of us, I bet, here on the House floor who haven't had a relative touched by the problems that cigarette smoking or other tobacco consumption can cause.
Meanwhile, Republicans are calling the bill a job killer, with Representative Deb Keel of Crookston worrying that many people in her district will drive to North Dakota to buy cigarettes and alcohol.
I might as well put a sign up on my district that says, don't bother coming here, just go over to North Dakota, because that's what we're doing. We're sending our businesses, we're sending our people over to places that do not tax this way.
The House's version has to be reconciled with proposals from Senate Democrats and Governor Dayton. Senate Democrats say they'll vote on their tax bill next week. Prospects for a bonding bill have dimmed after Democrats in the Minnesota Senate added a cash allocation to their tax bill for one of the session's key bonding project proposals, the renovation of the state Capitol building. The move prompted harsh words from the House Bonding Committee chair, who called it irresponsible and arrogant. Tim Pugmire reports.
DFL Governor Mark Dayton put $109 million for the Capitol renovation front and center in his $750 million bonding bill proposal earlier this month. House Democrats did the same in their $800 million borrowing package for public construction. Senate Democrats support the project too, even though they don't have their own bonding bill, and it looks like they may not intend to propose a bonding bill this year. Instead, DFL Senator Ann Rest of New Hope successfully amended the Senate tax bill to make a $30 million cash commitment to the project, along with another $173 million in the following two-year budget cycle.
We have been meeting and discussing this, and we believe that this is the right thing to do at the right time.
Rest also included $3 million to begin the planning and design of a new office building that could accommodate lawmakers during and after the Capitol renovation. DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach of Cook said he didn't want the project to get caught up in the politics of a bonding bill, which would need some Republican votes in both chambers to pass.
I really hope that this puts the Capitol at a different level, at a priority for Minnesotans, that people aren't going to try to play political posturing to leverage for something else.
Bach said using cash rather than borrowing will save Minnesota taxpayers money. But the chair of the House Capital Investment Committee strongly disagreed with the Senate approach.
Really, in a year like this, to use cash for long-term debt, I mean, that's like irresponsible when we should be doing education and health care. That just boggles the mind that they would use cash in that way. I'm just stunned.
DFL Representative Alice Hausman of St. Paul said she's grown increasingly frustrated with this session's bonding bill work and the Senate's lack of progress on a bill. She said at this point in the session, there should be bonding bill discussions underway with the governor, House, and Senate. But she said no such discussions have taken place. Hausman also takes issue with the Senate's contention that the Capitol renovation is more important than all the other public works projects around the state that would be funded in a bonding bill.
It may be a very important project. It is not the key need. The key need is basic infrastructure for the economy, for higher education, for wastewater infrastructure, for roads and bridges. That's what keeps the economy humming, not a renovated Capitol.
There's no Senate bonding bill proposal, but budget committees have held hearings on many of the proposed projects. Majority Leader Bach stressed that the Senate can't consider a bonding bill until it receives one from the House, and he's not sure that will happen.
I don't know if the House can put the votes together to send a bonding bill over. And if they cannot, then certainly the Senate is right. The capital renovations will go forward with the provisions in the Senate tax bill.
Bach's coolness toward a bonding bill is just fine with the top Republican in the Senate. GOP Minority Leader David Hahn of Eden Prairie said he agrees with Bach and the majority on this one.
I don't think we should do a bonding bill this year. I think this is the year we should focus on the budget, try to get that dealt with, and not get the budget issues wrapped up into the politics of a bonding bill, which can be complicated. So let's get the budget done this year and look at bonding next year.
DFL House Speaker Paul Thiessen said he still looks forward to talking to Senate leaders about a bonding bill and the Capitol renovation. Governor Dayton's office did not respond to requests for comments on the issue. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. And this one is for the online shoppers out there. As you probably know, online retailers don't have to collect state sales tax if the company doesn't have a location in the state. Now the U.S. Senate is debating a bill that would change that to allow states to collect sales taxes. It would almost certainly make your next Amazon purchase a little more expensive. But traditional retailers, including Minnesota-based Target and Best Buy, are cheering the legislation. Brett Neely has the story.
Here's one of the problems with the current state of sales taxes online, according to DFL Senator Amy Klobuchar, who was speaking on the Senate floor this week.
I have seen with my own eyes people go into Best Buy, spend a half an hour with a very eager salesperson who's helping them in any way, look at dozens of TVs, and then go back outside the store and buy it on the internet. That's not how things should work.
When people shop online, either for the convenience or to avoid sales tax, it creates a problem for states, said fellow Democrat Al Franken in a speech supporting the bill.
State and local budgets have been hit really hard since the Great Recession.
The National Conference of State Legislatures estimates that those governments missed out on $23 billion worth of taxes last year due to online sales, with Minnesota's share at about $450 million. With lawmakers considering all kinds of tax hikes and fee increases at the state capitol, those hundreds of millions of additional dollars from online sales would mean less need to raise taxes. The bill, known as the Marketplace Fairness Act, easily cleared a procedural hurdle earlier this week with a strong bipartisan vote. That's in part, says Franken, because many Republican governors have given their backing to the legislation.
It brings much-needed revenues to their states without creating a new tax. There's no new tax created here.
The legislation requires retailers to collect the appropriate sales tax wherever the goods are being shipped. There's a big exception for small retailers. Any business that sells less than $1 million out of state won't have to collect taxes. And states will have to provide companies with software to calculate those taxes. Max Belke with the National Conference of State Legislatures says that a decade ago, that software might have been difficult for online retailers to use, but not anymore.
You plug in the address, which the product is going to be shipped to anyway, into the software, and it instantly calculates the sales tax that's owed.
This bill has been a long-time goal of big retailers like Target and Best Buy, who have fretted that online retailers have an unfair price advantage because of the tax issue. Even Amazon has decided to back the legislation, in part because the company's business strategy now includes placing warehouses close to its customers all over the country. But some anti-tax Republicans and lawmakers from states without sales taxes are putting up a last-ditch fight. Republican Kelly Ayotte represents New Hampshire in the Senate.
Talk about an administrative nightmare. And you know why? Because states are in a position where they want to use this as a cash grab to make other states and online businesses do their work of tax collecting for them instead of them doing it themselves.
While Ayotte and her allies look like they may lose this battle in the Senate, the bill's outlook in the Republican-controlled House is less clear. Influential conservative groups such as Americans for Tax Reform and the Heritage Foundation are trying to rally GOP members against the bill. But in the long run, the NCSL's Max Belke says that now that Americans are used to buying everything from diapers to TVs online, online sales taxes are inevitable.
If someone actually tells you that the Internet is going to go away because online retailers are going to have to collect taxes the same way as brick-and-mortar stores on our communities, I would just find that quite laughable.
House leaders haven't promised to vote on this bill yet and are waiting to see what the Senate does. Amy Klobuchar notes that every member of Congress has brick-and-mortar retailers in their district, and lawmakers are sure to hear from them if the Senate passes the bill. Brett Neely, Minnesota Public Radio News, Washington.
About a half dozen Minnesota school districts had problems yesterday when they tried to administer the online assessment test known as MCAs. Troubles with the test have been going on for a week. The problems could result in fines for the company that delivers the test, and as Tim Post reports, some state education officials fear the testing delays might hurt student test scores.
Thousands of Minnesota students have sat down in front of a computer in the last few weeks to take their MCA tests. Almost all of the state's 3rd through 8th graders take their math MCAs online. About 30% take their reading assessment tests the same way. For some, and no one is quite sure how many, it's been a frustrating experience. Students in dozens of districts faced problems this week, and even more had trouble last week. The test questions have been slow to load, sometimes taking several minutes, and some students have been kicked off the system while taking a test. Last week, the company that delivers the tests, the American Institutes of Research, or AIR, blamed a problem with their servers. They have yet to find the cause for this week's problem. Charlene Briner, chief of staff at the Minnesota Department of Education, says the glitches have upset students, teachers, and families.
High-stakes testing produces anxiety in and of itself, and this kind of uncertainty creates understandable consternation among students, among teachers, among families. It is not a good situation.
schools prepare students throughout the entire year for MCA tests, which measure the academic progress of students, ultimately providing the state and federal government data on how well teachers and schools are performing. Older students need to pass certain MCA tests to get their diplomas. Educators worry that if students encounter complications during testing, they'll be rattled and won't perform as well, especially if they already suffer from test anxiety. Kevin Ward teaches and is the testing coordinator at Avalon School, a small 8th through 12th grade charter school in St. Paul with fewer than 200 students. Last week, online testing was delayed for dozens of Avalon students. They had to quit and retest the next day. Ward's fingers are crossed that more testing being done today goes off without a hitch.
If the students don't do as well as I think they'll do, that'll be the first thing I'll think is, well, testing was screwed up. That's why it happened.
The state has a three-year, $61 million contract with AIR to deliver the tests. That contract is set to run out in 2014. The company could face fines because of the delays. The state contract outlines financial sanctions, $5,000 per incident, if there are hardware, software, or other problems. No one from the company was available to comment for this story. The Minnesota Department of Education's Charlene Briner says the state is working with the company to clear up the problems. Minnesota schools have until May 10th to complete the tests. But she says, in the end, the testing problems may affect how useful this year's test scores are for measuring student progress.
At a certain point, there are reasonable questions about whether or not the results of these tests are valid or not.
The testing problems come as Minnesota considers changes in how students are assessed. State lawmakers are considering dropping the tests students take to get a diploma, while better aligning other assessment tests with college and career readiness. And state education officials want to put more assessment tests online, but are now having conversations about how best to offer high-stakes testing when computer glitches cause problems.
That's our education reporter, Tim Post. The Minnesota Department of Health says 13 people in Minneapolis got sick with a salmonella infection after eating Mexican-style cheese made with raw milk. Rupa Shenoy has more.
The health department says last month at least 8 people were hospitalized with the same strain of salmonella after eating unpasteurized queso fresco. The product was homemade by someone who delivered the cheese to friends and family. Health department epidemiologist Carlota Meduse says others also may have purchased the queso fresco on a street corner on East Lake Street in Minneapolis.
Traditionally in Mexico, it's not uncommon to find queso fresco made from raw milk. It's very possible that some people want to go back to a more traditional cheese, or that they find it to be more flavorful and find ways to find unpasteurized queso fresco.
Everyone who was hospitalized has been released. Meduse says the individual who made the cheese may face fines. Rupa Shenoy, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's the NPR News Update for Thursday, April 25th. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.